We began discussing yesterday Biur Yahadut and under what situations a person has Ne'amanus if they're Jewish and the various practices along the lines of Takanas Lita, that even in situations where it may gradin, a person may have Ne'amanus to self-represent that they're Jewish or that they were Megai or Meager that could have said that they're Jewish. Nevertheless, there are Takanas Sakal to require evidence, at least for people coming with questionable backgrounds. One thing that comes up from time to time is the question of identifying adopted children, where there's a claim that the natural mother was Jewish, but it's impossible to absolutely verify that. So generally speaking, anytime there's a suffix about the person's Jewishness, the recommendation is to do gerus just in case, call it a gerus chomer, whatever you want to call it, if we're unable to fully verify someone's Jewishness. There is a shu in the Sitz Eliezer, Chelek Zayin Simen Mem, who talks about essentially a government-run adoption agency. The context there was in Morocco, where there is a church-run adoption agency, but it has certain governmental standing. So in that context, the Sitz Eliezer suggests that there might be a notion of Umman Lo Maram Nase, that if a government agency claims something, let's say in that case, claims that they know the identity of the birth mother and the birth mother is Jewish, so there may be a certain professional ne'amanus that that government agency has because of the notion of umen lamar nase. It's not really relevant in the United States because there are no government adoption agencies in the United States. Everything is private. And generally, we assume that you can't believe the self-representation of an adoption agency about the identity of a birth mother, especially in a closed adoption where they're not able to divulge the name or other information about the birth mother. So even the only situation where there may be some latitude is with the Jewish Adoption Agency, at least years ago or decades ago, where in a given agency, maybe there's a very slow, strong, high percentage of people that were halachically Jewish that used that agency or where the babies were from. But for all intents and purposes, basically it's hard to rely on such representations unless there's evidence of who the birth mother really is. We did have one case a number of years ago where we were contacted by a rabbi of a middle-aged woman who was a member of the shul and had children of her own, who had recently discovered that she had been adopted from birth, wasn't aware of that previously, and it was impossible to verify whether there was any gerus involved, her parents had already passed away, her adopted parents. It was possible to verify whether there was a gerus done on her and what the identity of her adoptive parents were. So under normal circumstances, the recommendation would have been just do a gir l'chumra, so that'll solve all problems. However, there are two reasons that was not a practical solution. Number one, she was a member of the Syrian community, and Syrians don't accept gerus. And number two, at the time, she had a daughter who was in Shiduchim who was going out with a Kohen. So had the daughter been forced to do a Geirus, that would have rendered that Shidduch an impossibility. So in that particular case, there was some relative of this woman who took it upon himself to do some research, and through some surreptitious methods, was able to ascertain the identity of the alleged birth mother. Because they knew what town the birth mother was from, and he called the town clerk and discovered that there's only one person born on that day, that was the alleged date of the birth mother, and then kind of Messiah Fafitumo, he called this birth mother, not saying why he was calling, and got some information about her, and then was able to do some kind of a DNA test between a relative of the birth mother and the woman in question to confirm that they were indeed related. And on that basis, we were comfortable certifying the adut of this person. Now that's a not a everyday occurrence. But, yeah?
A lot of Syrians, they don't really keep that much of who's this guy.
So I think once it's a couple, a few generations later, then they're okay. But if they know that someone's a ger or son of gerim, then they won't associate with them. I'm sorry?
From Suffolk?
What do you mean from Suffolk?
Why is it good?
I'm sorry?
Why is it good after a few generations?
For them? Because it's their own takana anyway. It's not based on any halacha principle. It's against halacha. So again,
did he have it accepted, or what does that mean?
In the 1920s, the Tikkun in the community in Buenos Aires was that they're not going to do geiris on their own. That if someone wants to be megayir, they should go to Aris Tzolah be megayir. So Rav Kook wrote a nice haskama to the chief rabbi of Argentina. The Buenos Aires said, fine, if you have someone who wants to be megayir, send them to us, we'll take care of them in Aris Tzolah if it's appropriate. Because there's so much intermarriage, they don't want to have to deal with geiris. And somehow, in the 1950s, that morphed into not accepting geiris into the community. So that's a violation of how many lavin of an asager. So that's totally baseless in halacha. One other thing that comes up on occasion is people who claim to be from Bnei Anusim. They claim to be of the descent of the Maranos, or the those exiled from Spain 500 plus years ago. So it's almost impossible to prove that kind of a lineage, because even if there's some notion of the family that there's certain vestiges of Jewish practices, but over 500 years of non-observance and of intermarriage and assimilation, etc., it's virtually impossible to prove, even if you have a Jewish-sounding last name going back to Spain, that you're actually Jewish. So for all intents and purposes, in any situation like that, if a person claiming that kind of descent, the recommendation would be to do a Gir L'Chumra as well. So Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik wrote a letter, Shmuel Eliyahu has, that maybe you could have a slightly different Nusach in the Tudah, and a slightly different orientation, more of an orientation of Kiruv, which we discussed in other contexts. But bottom line, you require a geiris in those situations as well. I've yet to encounter someone who claims that lineage where we've been comfortable certifying Jewishness on its own merits, even though there are always some interesting tidbits or pieces of the puzzle, but it's hard to put everything together to draw conclusive proof. Another Yuchsin issue that comes up is the status of Karayim, which is an interesting parsha. The Ramah writes at the end of Siman Dalet. Nowadays there are two major Karay communities were in Egypt and in Russia. There are not that many left in Egypt, and not so many practicing ones left in Russia. A lot of them came to Eretz Yisrael after the state was established, and the Karayim and Eretz Yisrael have their own autonomy for religious matters, Karaite communities. There is a Karaite, in some came to America, there is a Karaite congregation in the San Francisco area that is what we would call conservative with a capital C, and that they have mixed seating and they celebrate Hanukkah. But there are more rights in the end of, they've assimilated certain rabbinate practices into their observance, and they've also assimilated some non-Orthodox practices into their observance. But be that as it may, the Ramah writes in the end of Siman Dalet and Ibn Ezer, HaKaraim Asa L'Schatin Lehem, you're not allowed to marry a Karait, V'kulah Hain Safek Mamzerim, V'ein Mekabel Mosam Im Rosam Lafzer, V'ein Safek Mamzerim, V'ezel Seif V'shem Chubas Arash, why are they Safek Mamzerim? Because we don't know, maybe the Kedushin was a good Kedushin, maybe the Gittin weren't good Gittin, and therefore there were Yuchsin issues, there were Heter L'Kol issues. Meaning there are three theoretical possibilities. Either the Kedushin weren't the good Kedushin and the Gittin weren't good Gittin, in which case you have a net, you're net even. The Kedushin were good and the Gittin were no good, and that's the worst scenario. Or the Kedushin were good and the Gittin were good, which is a less likely scenario. So the Ramah passes based on the Shuvah of the Rash, that you're not allowed to marry a Karai because they're Safek Mamzerim. So Safek Mamzerim is the worst of it. It could be, if we weren't sure if they're Jewish, so then just do a Geiris. But if they're Safek Mamzerim, Geiris won't help you. Aval Anusim, Achozim L'Das Yisrael, Nirli Shemutu L'Shatim Ankumo V'Shar Geirim. So the Anusim you're allowed to marry there, there's no Chashash Mamzerim. That's the Ramah. But the Piskei Tshuva quotes other Rabbonim who have different positions here. Piskei Tshuva Sukkata Memhei, he quotes on the note of Yehuda about someone who married a Karite. They quote the Ramah. The Amna Nuchalomar, the Akalo Aser Ela Ba'aser the Kvi. So maybe the Ramah was only concerned where it's Kavua. The Asher Ruben Labene Gershin in Mikomakam Chashiv Lo Beteli. But if it's Pirish, if one of them leaves Egypt, it leaves their Karaite community, so maybe you could say, call the Persian a Persian. Even if there's a Chashash from Zerah, so what percentage of the population is that? We're not worried that 60% of the population are mazeret. So whatever the percentage is, it's not a rov. So if it's not kavua, then you have the right to assume that it's parish meruva parish, says the Nod Yehuda. The lives are shem yikav and a kavua shem etaksel makom for you. So lo shayachacha. Ella shomrani shem aisha zos ba'at ma'isa makom kavua lishivas karam. She's from Egypt, and then she went somewhere else. So maybe that's not considered parish. Okay, so that's the discussion in the Nod Yehuda that the Tzitzkei Shuvah quotes. And others say, it's a Radvaz, that the minhag was to accept Karaim and not be concerned about Chashash Mamzeres and to allow them to marry freely. But my sense is that the general orientation of the Rabbi Nut and Eretz Yisrael in the recent decades has been to adopt more of the Radvaz-oriented position to allow Karam to marry freely within the Jewish people, those Karam Yuchasim who came from the real Karaite stock, and were not concerned, or they're not concerned about the Ramaz Yishasaf and Mamzeres for whatever Cheshvanos the other Achronim bring. We've had a few times inquiries by Karayim who wanted to know their status, but none of them ever panned out that we actually have the issue of Tzak, thankfully. So that does come up to time. It's relevant to the question of Ethiopians also, where Ramosha and many others were of the opinion that Ethiopians definitely require a Geiris, at least Misafik, or Vavadi was of the opinion based on this Radvaz, and other source material about the Ethiopians specifically, at least of the Mishpachos and Yuchasos within the Ethiopians. Vadi held that the Ikara din, you don't need a Geiris, even though it was a matter of policy. The Lechachila recommendation of the Rabbanu was to do a Geiris. Push comes to shove, if they did do a Geiris, so the Rabbanu, at least within certain sectors of the Ethiopian community, the Rabbanu has accepted them as Jewish. But our position would be that a Geir Lechura is necessary, and that's happened a few times here. Where we've had people from that population coming to get married, and we required a gir l'chumra.
I guess with the karoyim, I guess are we when it comes to machlokes again about whether they're gittin or gittin,
right.
we're not. I'm saying when, even if it's mishpachos miyuchasos, so I'm saying, but let's say one of them got divorced, if we
right. So the reason we're not concerned about that would be the other reader's argument that it's all. Parish, Meruva Parish, and they haven't gotten Kliusam anymore.
And so, the Maisa, there won't be Sotek Mamzeres. For whatever reason,
right,
there won't be.
Mishvaka Shinim Adidma,
okay.
We have no active knowledge, and so many generations removed, we have no particular...
So we shouldn't be Choshish for Mamzeres.
Right,
we're not getting into the...
Right, so that's what some of the Achronim, the Radvaz was around the contemporary of the Rama. So that's... Right, that's what others hold, and my sense is from the literature coming out of the Rabbanut and the Pesachim that I've seen that their orientation is more Lekula. If we ever needed to pass on that here, I think we require further analysis, but dodge the bullet till now.
It's not Maisim
B'chol Yoyim. Not Maisim B'chol Yoyim. More of an issue there, because I think there is more of a Karai population there as well than here. If you look around the internet, you'll find some interesting things about when I first encountered this topic, I took out some books in the library, comparison of Karaite and rabbinic practices going through Chumash straight, whatever.
Interesting
topic. Okay, now let's talk a few minutes about the definition of maternity in halacha. Again, this goes back to some of our Geiris issues and where a Geiris is required, but in situations where it's unclear who the actual mother is, where there is a genetic mother and a gestational mother, so what does halacha view as the halachic mother, where one of those is not Jewish? So some want to bring a raya from the Moshe Zekein LeBalei Tosos and Targum Yonasan in Parshas Vayigash on the identity of Shaul ben Akananis. What does Rashi say ben Akananis is a reference to?
That's because he was Chamor and Dina, right?
And Dina. The Shaul ben Akananis is Shaul ben Dina. So how could that be that Shimon married Dina if they were brother and sister min ha'av min ha'eim, which is aser for ben Noach as well, even if you'll argue that the avos kadam matan Torah had a din of b'nei Yisrael only l'chumra, or even if you argue they didn't have a din of b'nei Yisrael.
Akoponim.
Right. So Moshe Zakein and Bali Tosus has a comment that Dina was conceived in Rachel's womb, and there is a uterine transfer to Leah, and that's what the Targum Yonasan has as well earlier. That Dina was conceived in Rachel, and then the fetuses were switched. So the Moshe Zakein and Bali Tosus says, based on that, that Bnei Noach were only prohibited to marry Achoso min Ha'av min Ha'em, but Achoso min Ha'av Shalom min Ha'em, if there's a different mother, then there's no Isser Arayus for an Achos min Ha'em, an Achos min Ha'av in Hilchos Bnei Noach. And that's why Shema would have been able to marry Dina. So someone to bring a Raya from there, that you see maternity is based on the genetic mother, because if maternity is based on the gestational carrier, then the Moshe Tzakenim doesn't have a point, because then Leah would have been the halachic mother anyway. The fact that Moshe Tzakenim Bali Tosa says that the halachic mother, it seems to indicate the halachic mother was Rachel and not Leah, and therefore there's no Isser of Achos min Ha'em, but maybe that should indicate that the genetic mother, not the gestational mother, is the halachic mother.
Was the source that they married?
That's Rashi. That's the
halacha.
That's the question. So some say, no, that's an agadatha. You can't bring rice from an agadatha. In the other direction, Rabbi Karlbach from the Mir in his Chavetz Chas Hasharon, in Parshas Vayigash, quotes some of the Maral in Zohar Chadash and Megillas Esther. Maral in Zohar Chadash, Perek Beis, Pasuk Zayin, U'bemos Aviya V'ima. Maral writes, what does it mean, U'bemos Aviya V'ima? At the time that she became the mother died. Meaning, B'shas Leida, definition of maternity is B'shas Leida, U'bemos Aviya V'ima. When U'bemos Aviya, father is determined at conception, ima, and motherhood is determined at the time of Leda. So he quotes that that comment of the Maral, implying that the gestational mother is the halachic mother. Rav Asher Weiss in a tshuva quotes and rejects someone to bring a raya from the Gemara in Sanhedrin Sadi Aleph from the days. The Gemara there has a machlokas between Rabbi and Antoninus, whether the neshama is infused in a person at the time of conception or at the time of birth. And we assume that the neshama is infused at the time of birth. So apparently someone will say, so then it must be that the gestational mother is the halachic mother, because that's when the neshama comes in. Rav Asher says, what does one have to do the other? What does the neshama have to do with yuchsin? Okay. The other rayas in both directions, Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, or Av Beis Din, is fond of quoting this in this context a comment that the Remeir Arik was masking to. There is a Sefer book written around 100 years ago called HaTalmud U'Mada'ei HaTevel. Rabbi Bleich quotes this in the first volume of Contemporary Halachic Problems, written by a Rabbi Yekusiel Kemelhar. So he was talking about the possibility, what he claims was actually done at some point, of a uterine transplant. And in that context, he quoted a Gemara in Sotam and Gimel Mebeis. The Gemara in the context of Orla discusses Yalda Shesacha Bizakena, that if you graft a young sapling together with an older tree, then the young sapling is batel in the older tree, and there's no din Orla. Right? Orla is only relevant for the first 3 years. Wrote, so you graft a older tree that's past the orla period with a younger tree, so the younger tree is batel to the older tree. So this Rabbi Kemelhar wanted to say on that basis that so too, if you if you transfer a rachem from one woman to another woman, so then the rachem is batel to the new woman, and therefore the child would be considered the child of the gestational carrier and not of the genetic mother.
Uh-huh.
So Rav Schwartz is very funny. The fact that Meir Arik is masking to this, so that that's where Schwartz was inclined to this position, that the gestational mother is the halachic mother, to which Rav Asher Weiss comments about that raya, v'chi adam eis asadeh, that I can bring a raya from Orla to maternity. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik is quoted as being of that position as well, that the gestational mother is the halachic mother. Rav Elyashiv originally was quoted that way, although in later years Rav Elyashiv was quoted as having been closer to the other position, that the genetic mother is the halachic mother. That's Rabbi Willig's preference, that if push comes to shove, it's more likely that the genetic mother is the halachic mother. That's Rav Asher Weiss's preference, and that's Rav Avadia's position, and that's what his son Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef writes in his Kala Yagir. But Lemaisa, given that it's in some sense an unresolved question, as we noted in our, or I think we noted in our Gave Shirim, if not, we're noting it now, that the general practice of Bate Din is that any time either of these players, either of the mothers, is not Jewish, then a Gavis is required. Call it Lechumra, call it Nikra Din. The Nafkaminus will be, depending on your orientation, if you're oriented to assuming that the genetic mother is the halachic mother, and you're just doing a Gavis Lechumra where the gestational mother is not Jewish, so that might affect how you conduct a bris. Meaning, will you say, will you be comfortable enough to say lachniso or not? So that may depend on what you assume the ikar din and what's considered lechumra.
What does Rav Schachter say on that machlokas? Does he have anything to say?
Rav Schachter thinks that as a practical matter, you should do a geiris in both directions.
Is he leaning towards one direction or the other?
I didn't get that impression when I spoke to him about it, but maybe I didn't. My recollection is I didn't get an impression that he had a strong orientation. The other relatively new twist on this is Rav Asher has a tshuva, not the Minchas Asher, I think this is printed on the website that has some of his tshuvas.
Oh, a Torah base?
A Torah base, yes. That the newest technology is that in some situations where you're undergoing IVF and there's some issue with some of the genetic material of the mother, that you can supplement certain sequences of mitochondrial DNA to be mashlim instead of the deficient genetic material of the mother. So in theory, you could have three players. You could have the gestational carrier, you could have the genetic mother, and you could have the donor of the mitochondrial DNA. So then you might have three candidates for motherhood. Rav Asher thinks that it's impossible to have two mothers, so if the genetic mother is going to be, if you'll assume the genetic mother is the halachic mother, you can only have one mother, so the rov is going to be the mother that's responsible for 99% of the DNA makeup, that's going to be the halachic mother, and the fact that you have a tiny sequence of mitochondrial DNA that you stick in to be mashlim, that's batel to the rov. Rabbi Bleich does point out in an article in Tradition a number of years ago, which I imagine must have been reprinted one of the later volumes of Contemporary Halachic Problems, Gemara and Sotah, Menbeis and Menbeis. Goyas is referred to as Isha Beinayim. Why Isha Beinayim? So the Gemara has four deos what Isha Beinayim is. One of them is Rabbi Yochanan, who says, Bar mea papi v'chada nanoi. What does that mean, bar mea papi v'chada nanoi? Says Rashi, ben atarovess, shabo harbe anashim al ima v'layla achas, v'nis abra min echad, nimsa ha'echad aviv v'kula min afim. So there were a lot of prospective fathers, but only one of them actually contributed the zera. And the rest of them were min afim. So there's one father and 100 min afim. Says Tosfos that no, there were, the Goyas was conceived through a combination of multiple Zeras. The Tosa seems to allow for the possibility that you could have a conception through Sarah more than one person at a time, and then potentially have more than one father. So if you have more than one father, maybe you could have more than one mother. My friend, Rabbi Dr. David Shafe, told me that he mentioned Rabbi Bleichwey to Rav Asher once, and Rav Asher said he'd have to think about it. So I don't know if he's thought about it since then, or changed his position. I imagine not. But at least there's a marmokum that's an interesting marmokum on courtesy of Rabbi Bleich.
So Rabbi Bleich go with that, he thinks, now? I mean, the child is with the mitochondrial DNA.
No, I think he was saying is that theoretical matter, that that is a possibility. I don't think he was saying that it's a fuck.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I remember that it's maybe places that quotes Mamish the Yerushalmi, but it's an Ofni Yerushalmi that says this in Yevamos. The Yerushalmi says, "Ve'yitzi Isha Ben Aris." Pull it up here. Ma'arachos of Pishdim. Amar Masnaya V'Lopli Gan Achshla Nisra Chazera Ishim Uberes Mishnei Bonim Bnei Adam Ka'achas. Mishnei Nisra Chazera Ain Ishim Uberes Mishnei Bnei Adam Ka'achas.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But yeah, no, I mean it's like.
Yeah, so it's
interesting that it's...
Yeah. Good, okay, Shkach. Now, speaking of mitochondrial DNA, so the latest hot topic related to Biur Yahdut and mitochondrial DNA is that Rabbi Zev Litka, who is a... hangs out in different circles in Eretz Yisrael, Zalman Uchavit, by Rav Asher, and Fleischer maybe. I met him my last trip, or one of my recent trips to Eretz Yisrael. So he came out with the Sefer a couple years ago, and this is what he's trying to push within the Bat HaDin Rabbaniyah. There's research that's been done that there are certain DNA sequences, what they call haplotype sequences, and which are sequences of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is solely maternal. And the research indicates that there are certain haplotypes that appear in significant percentages among Jews and very minimal percentages among non-Jews. So let's say one of the numbers are that a given haplotype appears within 54 out of 1,500 Jews, and 7 out of 51,000 non-Jews. Or a different version was 64 out of 1,500 Jews and 3 out of 22,000 non-Jews. So let's say you have a situation, the two of the shaylos that were asked, one is in the Eretz Chemlitz by Mirei HaBazak, so the question that they were asked related to this is there was a woman who was married to a guy and her father didn't want to convert, but her husband didn't want to convert, but she very much wanted to be Jewish. Now, why she wanted to be Jewish, she's married to a guy, better that she shouldn't be Jewish, but that's the Kasha and Maisa. So the Shaila was, she tested positive for this haplotype that exists in high percentages among Ashkenazi Jews, let's say. So can we assume that she thinks that she's Jewish, and her grandmother survived the war, and her grandmother won't talk to her, so can we assume somehow, based on this mitochondrial DNA evidence, that she's Jewish. Again, in that particular case, it's better not to be Jewish. But can she assume that she's Jewish? Or the shaila that Rav Asher wrote a tshuva on this topic to Rabbi Ullman from Australia, which was originally presented at one of the conferences at Dayan and the Bat HaDin Rabbaniyah a few years ago, and is reprinted in the two-volume work on Evan Ezra called Orach Mishpat that came out last year. So there the shaila was also not as exciting as shaila, or not... And that's something we would get excited about, where there's a Jewish guy who was off the derech and married to a non-Jewish girl, and he's very happy being married to the non-Jewish girl, and the non-Jewish girl is very happy being married to him, couldn't care less. But the parents, it bothers that they have an intermarried kid, and the parents, we're doing a little bit of research, that discovered that the girl at one point, Masich Lefi Tumah, said that she heard that she's really Jewish. And then they did this mitochondrial DNA test and found that she has this this Jewish haplotype. So there, again, she couldn't care less if she's Jewish, but it'll make his parents happy. So is there anything to rely on to prove Jewishness on that basis? But the more likely question, or the more relevant question where we would care, which is what Rabbi Lizka is pushing, is, let's say, a better case. We have someone of Russian descent to move to Israel, and they're trying to prove their Jewishness with the Rabbanut, and 85% there, but we don't have enough hard evidence to prove Jewishness. So can this the existence of this haplotype push you over the top to have a comfort level about Jewishness? Yeah.
What were the numbers again?
The numbers in one of the tshuvas was 54 out of 1,500 Jews, and 7 out of 51,000 non-Jews. But in absolute numbers, there's still more non-Jews who have that than Jews, because...
that's what I was...
Right. So
that means you obviously can't do it. How would you argue that?
Why?
Because there are more non-Jews that have than non-Jews.
There are more...
non-Jews that have than Jews, so a random person is more likely to be non-Jews than Jewish, just because they
can't have that. Well,
it depends how you... I'll be wrong if you're saying, like, we're called the Parish Beruba Parish. It's like it's said.
Right, or do you or do you say
no?
Right,
or do you,
right. So there is a mathematical term which I forget at the moment that Rabbi Flew pointed out to me for this for that kind of analysis, and
statistically it's very simple.
Is it? It's what's it called? It escapes me at the moment. So some of the issues that were addressed in this context is, does this constitute a siman muvak of some sort, like regular DNA, where many poskim assume that at least like gabe edus isha, if you have the DNA constitutes a siman muvak because of the statistical near impossibility of two people having the same DNA. This definitely doesn't rise anywhere near that level, but does it cross some threshold of a simon? Is there an umdana? Would you argue that originally everyone was Jewish, and the people, there could have been mutations in both directions, or the people who have it or are not Jewish may have come from assimilated or intermarried people? So that's the bottom line, without going into the analysis now, because it's not really our topic, I just wanted to bring the question to your attention, it doesn't seem like there has been much traction yet among poskim to rely on this, definitely not alone, or even Tzirufim, but there's some discussion maybe it would constitute an umdana of sorts, and the jury is yet out as to whether there's what to talk about. Okay, so let's move on. In again, the context of our analyzing the suitability of two people to get married to each other as a prospective misadar kedushin, as we said, one of the questions we need to ask is whether there are any previous marriages on either side of. When it comes to Biur Yadut, we're really only concerned about the maternal side. When it comes to Heter Lakal, so both the maternal and the paternal side are of relevance. So let's say we discover that the person getting married was a product of a second marriage, and the parents' first marriage did not end with a get. That potentially raises the specter of mamzerus. What creates mamzerus and ma'isa is machlokas tanaim, but we pass in simon dalid seif yud gimel. Simon dalid seif yud gimel. Eizu mamzer ze haba mi'achas mikol harayas. Bei mechayve misas, bei mechayve prisas, kuf meva mianida, she'afa pishu pagav eino mamzer fil midrabanan. So, with the exception of balanida, even though that is chayve prisas, but any other relationship that doesn't have Tvisas Kedushin, Chayvei Misas, Chayvei Krisos, results in Mamzeris. And the consequence of that, as we know, a Mamzer is not allowed to marry freely, Lo Yavod Mamzer B'Kal Hashem. The only latitude is Siman Dalet Sifkat Beis. Ger Ve'Eved Meshuchrer Mutar B'Mamzeres. V'chei Mamzer Mutar B'Giyaris V'Meshuchreres Mishim B'Kal Ger L'Krikol. V'Avlad Mamzer. So a Ger is allowed to marry a Mamzeres. A Mamzer is allowed to marry a Giyaris. But Mamzeres will still be passed to the next generation. That doesn't mean that that's advisable. As the Beis Shmuel quotes here, so cut the lamed hay. Avad become welcome. Aser lahagos mamzerim keep on with him mamzer. So there's no iser for ger to marry mamzeres, but you're not allowed to be marba mamzer. So if they're going to have children, then you're being marba mamzer. Unless you assume, like Moshe seems to say, that children conceived through IVF would not be considered mamzerim. And in theory, you could have a ger marrying a mamzeres, and they'd have children through IVF, and mamzeres wouldn't be transferred, perhaps. Then the Mechaber writes, Sifkav Dalet, mamzer no se mamzeres, medvar murim kishishnein vadoim. Well, I'm Echad Vadai, Vasheni Safek, Alfio Shem Safek, Asim Zevazeh, Shem Echad Mamzer, Vasheni and Mamzer. So it's only a Vadai Mamzer that will be allowed to marry a Vadai Mamzeris. And again, you'd have the issue there of progeny and being Marba Mamzerim, the Yisrael. Okay. So what are the ways that we get out of a potential Chashash Mamzeris in these kinds of situations? So the first question to analyze is whether that first marriage of the parent that didn't result in a get was a halachic marriage. And for that, let's segue a little bit to discuss the halachic status of civil marriage and non-halachic marriage. So that's relevant in the context of mamzerus. It's relevant in the context of the matron ashes ish Lashuk, meaning there the consequences are even stronger than Mamzeris. Mamzeris, Safik Mamzer is Mutter anyway, so they're coolest by Mamzeris. But to be Matur Nation's issue that again, they were talking about a clear Chiyav Karis. So it's relevant in that situation where a get is not forthcoming, can you be Matur a woman without a get? It's relevant in our Mamzeris situation. So the question is, how do we view a civil ceremony or a non-halachic wedding ceremony as far as whether that is me'ikra din, a halachic wedding that would require a get that could create mamzeris if a get is not forthcoming? So we know the Mishnah tells us in Gittin Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, Hamegarish es ishto velana imo bepundaki. So subsequent to a get, if a man and woman spend the night together again, Beishami Amr Menus Vichem Enuget, Beisil Amr Vichem Enuget, Samachlokas Beisham Beisilel, do require another get. What's the issue? The Gemara explains, Machlokas is whether you say, Hein Hein Eide Yichud, Hein Hein Eide B. Do you assume, even though there's no Eidus per se, that they had Bia, there is Eidus on Yichud, there's Eidus that they're Nesiachi together, so do you assume hein hein eide yichud hein hein eide bia and ein adam osavilas avilas nos? The assumption is that a person wouldn't want to cohabit in sin, and therefore if they are together it must be l'shem kedushin. So Beis Hillel says that you require a get In the case of Megarshes Ish Shalanim of Pundaki, that's because even though there's no Eide Bia, Hein Eide Yuchad, Hein Eide Bia, Ein Adam Osa Bilas Bilas Nus, the presumption is that the Bia was Hashem Kedushin and you had Eidos on it. Okay. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Gerushin Perek Yud, Halacha Yutes. Horu.
I was wondering about it. The Marmakim said Ishus,
I'm sorry.
I was wondering what was the
Thank you. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Gerushin Perek Yud Halacha Ches Halacha Yutes. Sorry, Halacha Yutes. Nisyachid ima bifnei edim. V'hu sheyu shnei edim ke'achad. So if there's yichah bifnei edim, im haisim u'gereshes minu nesuin, choshishin la, shema nivala, v'hein hein edi yichud, hein hein edi bia. That context of the Mishnah on Pe'alef and Gittin, we say, we assume, or choshish, that the bia was the shem kedushin, and you had sufficient edus, shall call mekadesh b'bia, Eino sarach livel b'fnei edim, shalo yisyachid b'fnei v'yivel k'mashe b'yarnu, very safek mikudeshes. Fine. V'maisim mikudeshes min erisin ein choshen la sharei ein libo gaspa. The Rama writes that this din of hein hein eide yichud hein hein eide via is limited to a grusha where it was already libo gaspa, where there's a previous relationship, and therefore there's more of a affinity between the man and the woman, and a stronger presumption that the bia was the shame kedusha. According to the Rambam, that application is limited. Then the Rambam Halacha Yutes quotes the Shitas Hagaonim that it doesn't only apply to the Mishnah's limited case of a Baal and Isha who were previously married, but it applies to essentially any consensual relationship even when there's no intent to marry. Even Reels Nus would be governed by the principle of Ein Adam Osa Bilas Bilas Nus, because no one would want to engage in such a relationship for his Nus, and therefore must be that he was Bo L'Shem Kedushin. So as long as there are Eide Yichud, Hein Hein Eide Yichud, Hein Hein Eide Bia, even in a situation of Zinus. The Rama writes in the Rambam, Gemara writes in Siman Lamed Gimel Sif Aleph Hilchos Kedushin. Yesh Omrim Panu Yabala Penuya Lifnei Edim Choshish In Shem Akiva L'Shem Kedushin Chasaka Einan Rasa Bilasa Bilas Nus Avalim Kvar Hulsak Luz Nus O Shiesh Lo Isha Cheres Lo Cheshina. So if they are hosak luznus, meaning these are people that frequently engage in a znus relationship, so then that presumption of hein hein eide yichud and in adam asabilasabilasnus does not apply. Hiskei Tshuva writes in Simon Kuf Mem Tessa Katan Beis, Simon Kuf Mem Tessa Katan Beis, that a paris barayas is considered to be bechlal someone who engages in znus. So if someone is engages in various relationships, he's a paris barayas, so then the chazaka of in on the osavilas avilas nus does not apply. So there's a Shuvas HaRivash, which is quoted Lalach and Shulchan Aruch. Shuvas HaRivash is in Siman Vav. He was asked about a woman who came from the Anusim, and she had been married to another Jewish fellow who had been a practicing Christian. And they had a ceremony in the church without minyan, without Eidei Kiddushin. They were living together, and 3 months later, she got pregnant, and the guy abandoned her. He went to another country, lost contact, and there's no possibility of a get. So Rav Ash was asked whether, under the circumstances, you could be mad to the woman to remarry without a get, given that there was no halachic wedding ceremony. The Rav Ash writes that Ein Safek, Ki Erusin or Nesuin, Tikrayin Kama Shatirza, whatever you want to call what they do in the church, call it Erusin, call it Nesuin, call it whatever you want to call it. Shanasu
Bending.
I'm sorry?
Bending, like reminds of the rabbis.
Shanasu Bini Musa of the Kochavim, Ubikohaneha, Kohaneba Moseha, Shaim Bam Khashash Kedushin. That you can't call a church ceremony even a Safek Kedushin, even if they're Edim Kesherim, because there's no Nasan Huva Amar Hu, and even if the Amir is not Ma'akev, there's no Asugim Baso Inyan, that he has to give her something of value, Shem Kedushin, and tell her Harei Mekadeshesli. And they don't do that in the church. There's no Harei Mekadeshesli. Just the priest blesses them. The way he describes the ceremony is that there's no amira between the husband and the wife. Just the husband gives the wife a ring, and the priest blesses them b'kol gadol. So that's not kedusha. And he writes that even there's clearly no intention of having a Kedushin Kedas Moshe Yisrael, even if there would have been a kosher act of Kedushin, there are no kosher Edim. And then he discusses that if these people weren't Choshesh for the Isser Nida, which they weren't, then it's unreasonable to assume that they would have been Choshesh for the Isser Pnuya. If you're going to argue, Eina Damasa Bilasa Bilas Nos, right, so two questions. Number one was a halachic wedding ceremony. So he says there's no halachic wedding ceremony. It was done in the church. There weren't kosher edim. There was no amira. There wasn't a good kedusha. So okay, even if it wasn't a halachic wedding ceremony, but they're living together with husband and wife, edim adam osavi lasavi lasnus. So not the what we quoted that the Ramah quoted from the Mordechai that if it's hufsak lasnus, we're not kosher. They're hufsak lasnus. They were living an exclusive relationship. But he says that they clearly weren't choshesh, they weren't makbid and taras hamishpacha, so they weren't concerned about the Isser Nida. So if they weren't concerned about the Isser Nida hachamor, then they definitely wouldn't be concerned about the Isser Kal of Penuya. And therefore, you can't ascribe to such people, ein adam osa bilaso bi'ilas sinus. So this Rivash is quoted lalacha by both the Ramah and the Mechaber. The Ramah is in Simen Kavav Sif Aleph, Simen Kavav Sif Aleph. The Ramah writes, Chin Mumer Shanasa Mumeris Avodas Chacham Vini Museya. So you had an apostate who marries an apostatess, whatever the word is, in a church ceremony. Then it's Gai Racher Kach, and then it doesn't mean that they convert, it means that they're Chozer B'tshuva, they come back. Ein Kan Chashash Kedushin Klal, Umuteris Lasses Yimen of Loget, Ach Vishashayim Bakam Ashanim, Ein of Elokus Nuspa Alma, the Rivash. And the Mechaber himself quotes this in Simen Kuf Mem Tesif Av in Hilchas Gittin, that there's no Chashash Kedushin in such a situation. Okay, so that's the truth of the Rav Ash quoted by the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, that if you have a church ceremony, there's no chashash kedushin. And the Rav Ash also explained that you're not worried about hey nein eidei yichud, hey nein eidei bi, eidei masav, ein adam masav bilas bilas nos, where they're not concerned about the iser nida. Now, Ramosha does have an R on that, on the last point. This is in Chelek Aleph Eben Ezer Simon Ayin Hey. Chelek Aleph Simon Ezer Ayin Hey. That he says you could argue that there's a difference between the Isser Nida and the Isser Penuya, even though it's true that the Isser Nida is more common than the Isser Penuya. But if these people just weren't in a community where a mikvah was accessible, it was impossible to get to a mikvah. So it could be that she didn't go to the mikvah because there's no Breira. But because it's a Penuya, so maybe you would say, Eina nos, abilas, abilas nos, because that's something that's solvable. If it's a situation where the reason they didn't go to the mikvah is because it's an unsolvable situation, there's no mikvah around, so the fact that they weren't makbid on Nida doesn't necessarily mean that they wouldn't have been makbid on the Issa Penuya. If the Issa Penuya had an easy fix, and the Issa Nida didn't, then the fact that they violated Issa Nida doesn't mean they wouldn't care about the Issa Penuya per se. So that's just a quibble on some level, because you could argue with that last nakuda of the Rivash. But that which is known in our generation on some level as machlokas between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe really goes back to this Shuvas HaRivash. Rav Henkin was of the position, printed in a number of his essays in Lev Ivra and Perish Ivra, Perish Ivra Simon Gimel, Lev Ivra, page 1920 and on. So Rav Henkin argued that, among some of his other arguments, that there are certain kinyanim that require kavana, mshicha, hagba, kasef, and there are certain kinyanim that are what he terms natural kinyanim that don't require kavana. Chatzer shalad mekodesh shalami daito. If something falls in your chatzer, you don't need any kavana for your chatzer to be kona. It'll be kona anyway. So that's a kinyan that doesn't require kavana. So ishus, or living together as husband and wife, for Rav Henkin constitutes a kind of natural kinyan. And therefore, even if there's no wedding ceremony of halachic import, of halachic effect, and even if they're kavana, they don't care about eino nos abilas abilasness per se, but living together constitutes some kind of de facto kinyan. And therefore, Henkin felt that even the makom igun, you have a woman who had a, let's say, civil marriage ceremony, and she can't get a get from her husband, Rav Henkin was not permitted to allow such a woman to remarry. One of the concerns that he raises is in the context of a world where there's a trend away from halachic marriages, that this would just encourage that trend to develop further. Because if we tell people, look, if you get married halachically, then you'll be stuck with that again. If you don't get married halachically, then home free. So why should anyone have a halachic marriage? So Rav Henkin was concerned about that as well, which is happens to be now Ein Kol Chadash, that this is a trend in certain sectors in Eretz Yisrael these days as well, to do non-halachic marriages, the chachila, for this reason.
Meaning by the frumos sometimes, right?
By the
to do it further than
right.
I'm saying
no, that's a different chashbon. Even among people identify as religious, to not have religious ceremony, because that way, if things don't work out, they won't need a get. Rav Henkin does acknowledge that I think this is on page 20 in the Lev Ivra, that a civil communist marriage doesn't require a get, because the communists had a different conception of marriage, that it wasn't considered to be an exclusive relationship, and therefore that's a different conception of marriage. But the consensus opinion, which is reflected by a number of Shuvas and Rav Moshe, but many other places as well, is that in the spirit of the Rivash, that if push comes to shove, let's talk about a civil marriage for the moment, that if we're talking about people who are not observant, then civil marriage is not a lucky marriage, if it's not done, if there's no mitzvah at the bas b'fnei kasher eidim. And the fact that they're living together as husband and wife doesn't mean, if they're non-observant people, that we'd say, ein adam osim bilas, so bilas nos. because such a population is not concerned about bilusness. So Chelek Aleph, Igros Moshe, Siman Ayin Hey, for example, Rav Moshe discusses this approach, and that's in general what we'll call the consensus among Batei Din, both here and there as well, that the lichachila, we try to get a get even from a civil marriage, but push comes to shove, is what do we make about if it's impossible to procure? And Kol Shekein, when it comes to Mamzeris, if we're looking at the product of a second marriage after a first marriage, which was only civil, that didn't end in a get, then there is what to allow to be makel of that. So that's civil marriage. What about marriage performed by a non-halachic clergyman? So in theory, that could be both better and worse, depending on the situation. If you had, even if there's a marriage performed by a non-Orthodox clergyman, if you had a proper mesiras hatabas in front of two kosher edim, so then that would constitute a proper kedusha. So that's why Rabbi Willig advises, and others as well, that it's not a good idea if you're invited to the wedding of non-religious people and there aren't other shomrei Torah mitzvahs there, and you don't have a comfort level that if these people were to get a divorce, they get a halachic get, so better that you shouldn't be there for the chuppah, lest you end up being a aide who could theoretically make the wedding into a halachic wedding. But on the other hand, at the same time, there's no assumption that things were done properly. I mean, as opposed to, there is, we'll get to this in a little while, the Chuvas Chasam Sofer that the Pesach Yeshiva quotes, that works with the assumption that the presumption is that a halachic wedding was done in a halachically appropriate fashion. But here there's no such chazak if you have a non-Orthodox clergyman who's officiating at the wedding. Then Rav Moshe writes in a couple of tshuvas, Chelek Aleph Siman Ayin Vav, Chelek Aleph Ayin Vav, Chelek Gimel Siman Kafei, Chelek Gimel Siman Kafzayin as well. That maybe a reform wedding is worse than a civil wedding. Because you could have argued that if a person goes to have a civil wedding, a civil marriage, so the mindset is separation of church and state. This is the secular wedding. This is a technical, legal thing. But when they go home, maybe they care enough to be ba'ol l'shem kedusha. They went to the justice of the peace for civil ceremony because that's how you do things legally. But maybe they still are bound by ein adam osa bilas bilasnus. But if you're going dafka to reform rabbi, so that shows that that's your conception of Jewishness, of Judaism, that that's what a wedding is if you go to reform rabbi. And then you wouldn't say to such a person that he's ba'ol shem kedusha. So even theoretically, you might argue that a civil marriage followed by living together with husband and wife, that live together could be b'chlal in adam osa bilas bilasnus, but maybe if it's a reform wedding, you wouldn't say in adam osa bilaso bilasnus. Now the other issue that Rav Moshe discusses is number of tshuvas, chelek dalet siman yud gimel, chelek dalet siman mem vav, that a conservative rabbi, a reform rabbi, Kol Shekein, may be a pasul be'etzem. The fact that he's part of a movement that is doesn't believe in certain core principles of emuna, a movement based on kfira. So even if he does it for parnasa, that could render him a kofar pasul. The Rav Shachter would say that if he does it for parnasa, it could be worse. It could be a mumr l'tayavan. Even a personally observing conservative rabbi who doesn't drive to Shalom Shabbos and is Shomer Shabbos, Rav Moshe and a couple of Jews, indicates that he may be a pasul be'etzem anyway. As Rav Nata Rimba told me once, that the way he heard it from Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe said that any conservative rabbi, even if he's a Shomer Shabbos, who we consider apostle. Why? Because there's no conservative rabbi anywhere that if he heard that a congregant was sick in the hospital on Shabbos, wouldn't get in the car and drive there to visit him. So he said that was Rav Moshe's godless, that Rav Moshe understood the what the conservative rabbis were all about. So at least that's the Inyanatius ish, but you come to Bamzeris where there's more to talk about. So Rav Moshe, those Jews have been of the opinion that even a conservative rabbi who's a Shomer Shabbos could be apostle. Others wouldn't necessarily agree with that. So that's more questionable. If you have, let's say, this happened not infrequently, dealing with a case now where this is part of the fact pattern. Let's say you had a conservative rabbi who was a Masada Kedushin, and he himself was a Shomer Shabbos, and he used his Shamish, who was also Shomer Shabbos. So those are the only Shomer Shabbos people present. So is that, if you seem like your Moshe's more extreme Shuvah, is that a conservative rabbi is a puzzle best? He's a puzzle. But if you're Choshesh, that he's a kosher because he's personally observant, and he was only in the conservative congregation for parnasa reasons, not ideological, maybe he wasn't even a member of the rabbinical assembly, and you don't view that as a marilat teyava, so then maybe it was a kosher, and maybe he did have kosher aid in there, in which case that makes things more difficult.
Then also mitzad the gittin.
What do you mean mitzad?
The gittin of conservative rabbis.
That's a whole different parsha. Most of the mitzad nowadays, I don't think there's any conservative mitzad that we rely on. A generation ago, there might have been one or two who knew what they were doing and used kosher edim, where at least l'inyan mamzerus, there'd be what to be makel about upon investigation of the particulars of the cases. So we've had a couple such cases where b'tzira of other factors, we were makel in Yom Hazeres, where there was a conservative get, where we determined that the Edom were kosher Edom, and the shemas were done properly, and the get looked like it was a kosher get. And usually even there is b'tzira of other factors as well.
Fine.
But that's the that's not the norm. That's the rare case where you encounter such a get that you could be comfortable with at least in Yom Hamzeres, but see with other factors.
Is it Maisa B'chol Yom? They give Gittin?
Yeah, the conservative movement has a network of Masadra Gittin. Some men, some women, but yes.
So they do it, but they love Dafka making sure that it fits for us. Even though
it definitely doesn't fit for us.
Right. Even though
two generations ago, because we at different times tried to push within the non-halachic movements that at the very least, for someone who had a halachic wedding, they should push a halachic get. And even that didn't get so far.
It's terrible.
So one other issue that that could be relevant to Linian potential coolers for Banzeris is the question of Nimsa Echa Mehen Karov O Apostle. Let's say you have two designated Eidei Kedushin, and one of the Eidei Kedushin turns out to be Apostle, but you had 100 other Kasher Eidim in the room. So we'll see, this is one of Rav Avadya's big kulas that is not consistent with the orientation of Psak, of our tradition of Psak. I think we're out of time to discuss that today. So next time we'll pick up with Karv Apostle and then talk about other ways out of potential Mamzeris problems, and then the next stop will be Psulei Kahuna. What I'm thinking in terms of going forward is next week we'll try for Monday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Okay.
And if you're around the week after, we'll try to get in two more Shirin perhaps.
Okay. I'll be around the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, Ben, you're around? Yes, you're around?
Is there any preference for Monday? I mean, you can turn the
Yeah, I was going to have...